Coming to you live from the basement of an abandoned training facility, where we talk about fighting, training, and events. It's the Fight Mixer Show, where you can hear about all the local and world combat sports happenings. Get ready. It's time to gear up and square up, because we're going live on the Fight Mixer Show.
Welcome to another episode. We are here with UFC veteran, two-time MMA world champion, and representative of a great group called Freeling Murray UFC, Mr. Jason Reinhardt. What's going on, brother?
Hey, guys. How you doing, man?
Doing good. So you're representing Murray. If people don't know this, Lee Murray is one of the legends of the sport. And, you know, Lee Murray, a serious and nothing to start with in the cage. I mean, he's one of the pioneers and one of the legends, and you are represented with a great group, Freeling Murray UFC. And you also have a Facebook page, you also have a website, correct?
Facebook page, Freeling Murray UFC, and Freeling Murray UFC Instagram.
Awesome, man. Awesome. So, how you been doing? What's been going on with you, man?
Good, man. I wanted to start out with this. Can I do this?
Absolutely. You can do whatever you want. There you go. Follow, like, Facebook page, Freeling Murray UFC. Thank you.
And there you go.
Yes, sir. And Assalamualaikum to Muhammad. Looking awesome. Sorry, excuse my language. And we kindly ask of you to please look into the Ibrahim Murray Wimarani case. He is being held. I see it. Inside Morocco's Kifleet prison, we have been in prison almost 15 years.
Wow.
We pray Lee Behem Murray Wimarani, I'm sorry if I did not pronounce that correctly, can be released to his family. Awesome. Awesome.
How you doing, guys?
I'm doing great, and you know, thank you for sharing. And you and I had a conversation about that yesterday. So Lee Murray, I grew up watching as well. And if people don't know Lee Murray had his great fight with Anderson Silva. He's a UFC veteran. Also, picked the shit out of Peter Ortiz, which we all can admire and love. And Lee Murray, he didn't necessarily get the fairest of case. I mean, he didn't get the he didn't get his fair day in court. You know, something happened, a circumstance happened where, you know, obviously misconceptions of MMA and MMA fighters, they pretty much threw the book at him. And you and I talked about this briefly, which I think is bullshit, and you agree with me. So what exactly happened? What are you representing with Freeling Murray, a great cause?
Well, what I can talk about is this. He didn't get a fair trial. You know, he was the only one out of everyone that was not allowed to call witnesses. So basically a kangaroo court, and they gave him 10 years. And then it's been almost 15 that he's been inside the Moroccan prison. So we hope to get a message to the king, and hopefully he can be released to his family where he belongs.
Right. And speaking of misconceptions and, MMA, and he fought during, and in your generation as well. And I'm a great admirer of you and Gabe and that entire generation, that while the sport was trying to rise from the dead, especially after John McCain and, you know, all the state senators buried the UFC, and then UFC got purchased by Zuffa, you know, you are one of the pioneers that helped, you know, they put the sport on their back, broke their back for the sport to bring up to where it is today. UFC veteran and, you know, and besides, you know, representing one of those pioneers, what's been going on with you, man?
I just, I live here in New Smyrna Beach, Florida. I moved from my hometown about 4 years ago, and I'm just living life, man.
Awesome, man. Awesome. And you also, we had a great conversation too. And you know, the MMA community is very small, and it gets smaller and smaller by the day. You were also supposed to be on Tough Five, correct?
Yeah, I was. Yes. Yeah, actually, I was on Tough Five, but unfortunately, that's something I never talked about. I sent you the article, man.
Yeah,
it was a. It is what it is. But you know, I was on Tough Five. I made it on Tough Five. I was in the medicals, got sequestered in the hotel, made the whole show, and then, I told you what happened.
Right. Yeah, and you know, it's so weird because now we're in the MMA phase where MMA is under the confines of a publicly traded company where drug tests are done by USADA, and they'll pop you for eating the poppy seed bagel incorrectly, and you know, taking supplements and not reading the ingredients. They'll pretty much pop you for everything. And if you want to elaborate, you don't have to. We talked about it yesterday, and like we bonded on that. But what exactly happened that kind of got you cut from Tough Five?
Well, you know, it was very important, you know, when you're filling out the application, not to lie, you know, and not to leave anything out. So I, that screwed me actually, but hey, you know, that's in the past, but here's what happened. You know, I broke my neck in 2001 in that title fight, and I won the belt, by the way. Anyway, so but 2001, man, I ended up breaking my neck and having neck surgery. I was out about 19 months. And, you know, at that time, I went to Cenogenics Anti-Aging Center in Las Vegas. And they actually, right after neck surgery, I drove there. I had the neck surgery in San Diego. My dad and I drove to Vegas to Cenogenics. And they put me on human growth hormone and testosterone to heal the neck. And when I was in Tough Five and made it, what year was that again? What year was that?
I believe that was 2007, but I'm going to get on it with some verification. Tough Five.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah, I think it was 2007 because I think we were talking about this yesterday.
Yeah, because I had won a bunch of more fights, and then I made the show, and then Jamie, the executive producer, one of the producers for Spike TV at the time, she said, "There's a problem with your application," and I didn't lie, man. I wasn't taking it then, but I had taken it in the past, you know, for my neck surgery, but it didn't matter. They, you know, I flew home and got my bags ready to get on the plane to go to the house, and the phone call came, man. And I remember her saying, you know, this is the worst part of my job. And then she gave me the news. But hey, it is what it is. I was going to be in that house with a bunch of killers, man.
Yeah, that was a season, and just to break the mind for everybody, that was a season that was BJ Penn and Jens Pulver. BJ Penn, obviously a legend in his own right, and Jens Pulver, who can forget Little Evil? I mean, he had some fucking battles in his own. I remember him watching fights with him and Paulo Reno. I mean, those were legendary. And and you had Nate Diaz was in that season. Gabe Rudiger, who's one of our
Gabe, yeah.
Small world after all, right?
Yeah, man. It was they didn't have my weight class back then. I fought at 135, but you know, and they didn't have my weight class, so I moved up to 55. And then when I got kicked out of the Tough Five, that's when I signed to fight my debut against Joe Lauzon.
Yeah, and you fought against Joe Lauzon November of 2007, right?
I think so. That sounds right, man.
Right, I'm a big fucking nerd. I apologize, sir. and it's so interesting that you had that moral compass where you said, no, I'm not going to fucking lie on this application. That's bullshit. Even though the promotion was pushing you to lie on the application, you chose the path that nobody else would take in your circumstance. I mean, you're going to be on national television. You're going to be on this reality TV show that's taken off. During the time when the MMA started in the United States, they said, okay, we need you to lie on this piece of paper. And you said, bullshit.
No, they didn't ask me to lie. Nobody asked me to lie.
Oh, okay.
No, nobody asked me to lie. They just said, don't lie. They were very, very adamant on not lying on that application. So I should have lied, but no, I'm just kidding. Anyway.
Yeah, and you know what? It's a testament to that generation. I mean, there was no insurance, there was no money, barely any money, and the sport was just starting to grow. I mean, you know, it's not ironic where, you know, I see a lot of these legends, and I talk to a lot of these legends, where they're fighting in fights all over the place, the Cage, Gladiator Challenge, in Japan, and they're getting neck injuries, back injuries. You know, they're breaking their neck for the sport, and you know, to still soldier on, even with a broken neck, and even, you know, no matter what drugs they gave you or what drugs they prescribed to you, for you to soldier on, still want to go through that season and go into a house full of sharks, you know, it speaks volumes about you as a competitor. And you know, that competitive nature, when did it start that you want to get involved in mixed martial arts?
It was just, you know, man, I started in Taekwondo at age 9 and did the whole tournaments and all that for many years. And in my 20s, I had my Taekwondo schools and the UFC came on. And that was when I sold my Taekwondo school and said, man, I got to search out this Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I don't know how to fight.
What was your first impression when you fought, when you first saw a MMA fight? Because again, yeah, misconceptions all over the place because you come from a traditional martial arts background. So what was your first impression when you first saw an MMA fight?
My first, I'm sorry, what?
First impression, like your first thoughts when you first, because I had my thoughts when I first saw UFC 1. I was like, holy shit. I was like, oh, I was a little kid. But like when you first saw your first MMA fight, what did you think in the back of your head?
Oh, man, I thought those guys are crazy, man. I thought, man, I could never get in there. That's actually really what I thought. And then actually, when I found Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you know, that's when I started fighting amateur in the amateur ranks, and it just progressed, man. But yeah, when I saw that stuff, it was scary.
Yeah, and you're also a brown belt in BJJ. You're no slouch on the ground. Your ground game is fucking lethal. And you also trained with Vanderlei Fight Team, correct?
Well, when Miletic Fighting Systems, you know, sold and Pat retired from teaching, you know, I ended up going to Chicago and training, and then I had an opportunity to go to Vegas at Vanderlei Silva's camp, and I took it.
Yeah. Who would you say, because, you know, obviously Miletic Fighting Systems and Vanderlei Fight Team, but who would you say is the most influential, or a coach or a teammate, somebody that had the biggest impact on your career and helped you out the most?
Oh, man. There's been so many, man. You know, I would hate to leave anybody out. I mean, there's Mike Griffin, Greg Giddings, you know, guys that you may not have heard of. And, you know, and there's Pat Miletic, of course. And I've got my Gracie Baja, Marcos Barros, and just, you know, a lot of great people, man, you know, have influenced me throughout the years, you know, in their own way.
Awesome, man. And, you know, you had a long career, a long story career, and we're going to touch upon that. But we actually had a question. What would you say is your favorite fight or your favorite memory in the sport?
So there's a motorcycle, man. One second. Or either that or it was one of those jacked up trucks those guys like to put in, like, sound like a backfire, man. I'm driving in Florida. I think I'm getting shot, man. Yeah, where I come from, that's not, hey, there's gunfire everywhere. So I'm ducking and dodging, and these guys will rev it up. They think the shit's funny, man.
But you live in the beautiful country, man. I see the view. It's beautiful. And you're definitely living off the fruits of your labor for all your time in the sport. But back to my original question. So, a fan asked, what was your favorite fight or your favorite memory in the sport?
You mean of my own fight or anybody, somebody else's?
Your fight. Your favorite fight.
I would have to say that the fight that I'm most proud of is the George Conger fight, that Ohio wrestler. That dude was a stud. And actually, now that I'm sober, I can watch these fights. And I'm like, damn, I did that. You know, I out-wrestled this guy. And he was whipping my ass. That was a tough fight. Spencer Fisher was in the corner in the first round. I come back. And honestly, it's the first time in my career I was going to quit on the stool. And Spencer said, he says, man, you have a daughter, man. Get out there and go, you know. And I just, he flipped a switch on me, man. And that was it, you know. And then I won that fight. But George Conger, I would have to say, is my biggest victory.
Awesome, man. And you had a lot of great victories. I believe you fought for King of the Cage twice. And, you had a TKO win and you had a submission victory in King of the Cage, correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I believe so. Sir, man, I'll be honest, man. My career sometimes is one big blur, man. I have to ask my wife all the dates.
So, Now that you retired and you're actually starting something in bare knuckle MMA, something because we just saw Game Bread MMA, but you know you're now president of bare knuckle MMA, and we briefly talked about that on the phone last night. Can you tell us a little bit about your next venture in becoming a promoter?
Promoted, you know, and the whole time, man, I look back on my career and I'm like, man, here's what I did in my career. I was not only training for the UFC, I was running my gyms, I was running my insurance agency, and I was promoting fight shows, you know, to grow the sport. And I didn't do it for the money. I had my career in the insurance business, but I did it to grow the sport and to give my fighters a chance to compete and build their careers. But so I had a lot going on, man. I wished I would have just focused on one. But I still trained hard, man. I never let my training lax, you know. But what was the question? I'm sorry.
Bare knuckle MMA.
So we talked about last night. About 6 months ago, my buddy, my partner in my Courage Fighting Championships, the MMA shows I did for years, we're doing another one in Missouri, only MMA. Bare knuckle's not legal in Missouri. It's only legal in 5 states. But anyway, so I was talking to my buddy on the phone one night, and I said, man, I really am enjoying the going to these bare knuckle fighting championships, you know, like where my buddy Jay Fish is fighting at 205. He's an animal. Be watching out for Jay Hook'em Fish. And, you know, I was going to those, man, and I saw in the back, you see guys cut up, but nobody went to the hospital. And it's like, I truly believe with all my heart that without gloves is safer. And, you know, that's a debate, but I tell you, your hand is wrapped like concrete under those gloves, and then you put that padding on there, and the punch spreads out. I've been hit by both. I'd prefer to be hit with a bare knuckle any day. So I said, hey, man, why don't we go bring it back to, like, the old pancration days and do bare knuckle MMA and call it bare knuckle MMA. So I just expanded on that, made the rules, and I'm going to do my first show here in Florida. And the rules are this. So two fighters, first of all, they can wear their gi, they can wear their wrestling singlet, their shorts.
Shit. This is a whole new bare knuckle.
Sign me up, baby.
Yeah, geez, man. Hey, so they can wear their shirt, no shirt, whatever they want, man. No shoes, though. Only 3 wraps around the wrist, no hands, no wrap on the hands. Starting, standing up, the fight is everything. Punches, elbows, everything. But when it hits the ground, only open palm strike. That's it. No elbows on the ground, no knees, only open palm strike. And if there's not action, the fight gets stood up. But, you know, I thought, you know, this would also give jiu-jitsu guys a chance to move slowly into MMA and not worry about necessarily getting ground and pounded, you know, on the ground. So that I think it's a very nice transition. I'm going to start in amateurs first. Hey, George Maskeville, if he's listening, man, I would love to partner up with him and be a feeder show for his pro show. He can have the pros, man. I just want the amateur show here in Florida, and maybe my organization could be feeder show for feeder fights for his pro show.
And his show, I saw Game Bread, and Matt did as well. And I thought the show went off great. I thought the show was well done from a production standpoint, from a safety standpoint. And, you know, there are so many misconceptions, especially, you know, I feel like when I talk to bare knuckle fighting promoters, you know, it's kind of like that tightrope that they're walking with promoters and not promoters, but sanctioning bodies and, you know, state commissions and trying to get this legalized and, you know, emphasizing to these sanctioning bodies that safety is going to be first. No one's going to get hurt. These are trained athletes. Everything's going to be good to go. And when I talked to one bare knuckle promoter, he specified, he told me off camera, and I'm not going to mention any names, but he said, yeah, I didn't involve any of the ground game or anything like that because I didn't want any of these sanctioning bodies, or I didn't want any of these athletic commissions to think UFC won or take them back to the early 90s where UFC was getting blasted by the government. You know, what do you think is the biggest hurdle to get over to solve these misconceptions that bare knuckle MMA is safe, The actors and the athletes are trained professionals. The promoters are smart, and they're fighters themselves, and they understand the fight game. And, you know, safety is number one, and these guys aren't going to get hurt. What's the biggest hurdle you feel to make this completely universally accepted, just like MMA is across the country?
Well, let me ask you, did you say what that promoter, that he said he didn't allow the ground? What do you mean?
He said that he wanted to keep bare knuckle boxing. He didn't want the ground game involved because he didn't want sanctioning bodies to get, like, you know, flashbacks to UFC 1. So
yeah,
he kept.
I got you.
Yeah.
I got you. So he's sticking to bare knuckle fighting, standing up, all stand up.
Right.
Okay.
Just avoiding red tape.
Well, the way I understand it, man, there's five states that allow bare knuckle. Florida's one of them. Mississippi's another. I believe Kansas is another one. You know, but. The misconception, man, is when you say bare knuckle, you know, and that's people think, oh, man, bare knuckle. Well, first of all, you can't hit as hard. You cannot hit as hard. You'll break your hand. So, you know, the other thing is people will say, yeah, but that's bone to bone. A lot, you know, a lot of broken facial bones end in careers. Well, hey, that happens in MMA, man. So the hurdle, I don't know. You know, it'd be nice to have some of these commissions come to an event and come to George's event, come to my event, and we'll show you. And, you know, even the tape that George had, his great promotion that he did with the great, you know, production crew, you know, showing the tapes and showing the proof is in the pudding, man.
Absolutely. And people, there's a lot of hypocrisy when it comes to bare knuckle fighting and MMA itself. I mean, John McCain, the guy who got UFC pretty much banned everywhere, he was at a boxing fight in 1997 where a boxer died, you know, and this is the guy who said that MMA is the most unsafe thing and hitting people on the ground is un-American, and that stuck. It stuck with all these promoters, and there's still misconceptions that go on throughout this day. And, you know, and going back to Lee Murray, one of the gentlemen, Jeff, and shout out to him, he actually asked a question. When Lee Murray gets out of prison, what do you guys plan on doing? Like fishing? What do you plan on doing when he gets out?
Oh, man, I don't know. I don't want to speak for Lee. I just, you know, it's all I care about is him being home with his family where he belongs. You know, his family needs him, you know, and his daughter's like my daughter's age. So, you know, but it'd be great to see him when he gets out. And I don't know, I can't speak for him, but I would be looking for him to open some gyms. And I know for a fact, there is one thing I can say, you know, Lee's very misunderstood, you know, and I'm going to tell you, some of these idiots, these guys on, you know, in the streets and some of people that knew Lee or thought they knew Lee, man, those guys, they say so much crazy stuff on tape, man. And you know, glorifying a bank heist and just all kinds of stuff. And nobody talks about the good side of Lee. You know, nobody talks about when I was in Iowa and there was a bum on the side of the road holding a sign and some fighters, I won't mention their names, they snuck up behind him, the bum, and stole the sign. Lee didn't say anything. We went to dinner. After lunch, Lee took me. He says, come back, come with me. And so we went, and I'm like, where are we going? Man, he pulled up next to that bum. He might be mad I'm telling you this, but he pulled up next to that bum and handed the guy several hundred U.S. dollars and apologized for the fighters that did that.
Wow.
That's just one of many, man. The Lee helped so many people in the streets and gave so much, man. And, you know, when he's out, when he gets out, you know, I believe that he has an incredible, what better of a guy to show kids on taking the right path in life. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. And speaking on taking the right path of life, and you're setting an example as well. You're actually going to be in a documentary and a movie about your story in MMA and what you're doing after the cage. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, man. It's called After the Cage. It's myself, and I'm very honored to be in there with guys like Matt Hughes and Pat Miletich and Dan Severn and Jay Fish, you know, and a few others. But, you know, it was an incredible documentary, and it's going to be released soon. So Luca, the film producer, he'll get it out there. And I don't know what platform he's going to use. But, man, he's got some incredible content. And that when this thing goes out, people are going to really like it a lot, I believe.
So the sport is ever popular, it's ever growing, and it's now university, I can't even pronounce this word tonight, but it's now all over the planet. It's one of the hottest things on the planet, mixed martial arts, with gyms all over the place. Everyone is an inspiring fighter. Everyone wants to grow their name in the sport. But this is going to take people into what happens after the cage and after their long journey and everything like that. But you know, for an inspiring fighter that comes up to you and you fought everywhere and you fought for the biggest shows, UFC, Gladiator Challenge, King of the Cage. What's the biggest piece of advice that you can get fighters, that are starting their career, that want to make a name for themselves, and you know what to do after the sport is completed and after their journey is completed?
Yeah, well, of course, now the fighters are making great money, you know. But still, man, I would make sure that you get with a great manager. That's number one. You know, I was very blessed, man. I had Monty Cox as my manager and his partner, Chad Bergmeier and Chaz Bowling. Those three guys, man, you couldn't ask for a better management team. And so get a good management team that you trust and be loyal, man. That's the thing. A lot of the fighters I see today aren't loyal, man. They just hop around and jump gyms. And I don't know. I'm just not into that. But be loyal. Be with people that you can trust. And, man, no matter what, set up something for your future. Because you don't know, man, if you get hurt in that cage and you're done. You know, so you got to have a backup plan, you know. That's for sure.
So Joe Elmore, and shout out to him, he's a huge, huge title contender for bare knuckle fighting, and shout out to Joe Elmore. But for this promotion that you're starting and up-and-coming fighters, what do you look for? Well, especially when you're going to be recruiting and trying to get talent into the door and fight for your promotion, what do you look for in a talent or somebody that you say, that guy's going to be a star, that guy can make it? Like, what do you look for in talent, especially from a promoter aspect?
Being well-rounded. You know, and I look for a guy that embraces jiu-jitsu, you know, and if you're going to do MMA or bare knuckle MMA, you've got to have your jiu-jitsu, man. And so I look at that. If a guy really embraces jiu-jitsu, but his stand-up has to be on point nowadays too, you know, so everything, you know, but these amateurs that I'm recruiting, man, I just look for heart right now, heart, and they have to have some experience. They can't just let anybody in there. But I look for a good team that you can rely on and heart and somebody that really wants to fight. And that's really what I look for.
Yeah, it's so weird. Even on the amateurs. So I did commentating this past Friday. And even on the amateur level, all these fighters, you know, it's not one-dimensional. They're not just wrestlers with a little bit of boxing or everything like that. They're all well-rounded in every single area. I think I saw an amateur who actually wrestled in the Olympics, which is mind-blowing to me. I can't believe the sport is so evolved now where there's no such thing as a one-dimensional fighter anymore. Everyone is good at everything. It's crazy to me, man. Like,
Yeah, man. You know, when I was promoting all my shows, man, I can't tell you the hours I spent explaining the sport to somebody, passing out thousands of flyers and just, you know, telling the sport, you know, people, what's that? What's that? But now you don't have to do that, so it's beautiful.
What if you can change one thing about MMA, and now that you're wearing the promoter hat, if you can change one thing about MMA, bare knuckle, any type of combat sports, what's one thing that you would change?
Oh, man, that's a tough one, bro. I don't know. You stumped me on that one, bro, and I don't get stumped too much. I'm sorry. that's just being honest, man. I don't
about,
know, man.
How about something with weight?
Things are great. I mean, I do think though, man, some of these bare knuckle shows, bro, they need to be paying the fighters, man. They need to be paying the fighters. And even the UFC, I believe they need to be paying some of the, you know, up and coming fighters more. I mean, they can afford it. That's what I would change, the pay for the fighters, man.
And I absolutely agree. I'm also a big advocate for the Muhammad Ali Act. I think that needs to be implemented. I think if you're going to put on venom on these guys' backs and make millions of dollars off it, you better protect their backs. You better insure their backs and make sure that, you know, I'm pro fighter when it comes to everything. I'm definitely on the fighter side. And guys like you who pretty much put the building blocks to the sport together and fought where not a lot of people were watching, and not for Instagram clout, not like a Jake Paul or anything like that, where you're just trying to get notoriety on like Instagram or Facebook or anything. You guys fought because you're competitors and you're warriors. You wanted to build this thing, which, you know, I think the Muhammad Ali Act and protecting these legends like yourself and protecting these pioneers and protecting the future pioneers, you know, I think that's the most thing that I would change personally for myself.
Yeah, you know what? That is a good point. And, you know, the thing is, the fighters, I would also give advice to any fighter out there, man, make sure you've got insurance. You know what I mean? Make sure you've got health insurance, you know, because that's so important.
Right. And can we buy insurance from you, Jason?
You could, but I do life insurance, man.
Right on.
I sell funeral policies to people that to pay their funerals, man. Isn't that crazy?
Okay, so when my girlfriend kills me, I'm happy to go to you, I promise. So somebody actually had a question, Matthew. Mr. Producer, if you can pop up that question one more time. Oh, actually, I remember the question now. Somebody was asking, do you ever plan on getting back in the cage, or do you ever plan on fighting on bare knuckle again, or do you see yourself just as a promoter and helping build the future stars of the sport?
Hey, man, hey, let me tell you, I don't think it ever goes away that you want to step back in there again. I've got a lot of injuries, and, you know, I've always said if I could get this problem that I'm dealing with right now, if they could, you know, fix it, yeah, I would love to. But, you know, my wife says she would divorce me after 27 years if I did it again. So I don't know, man. Hey, I did get a thing where, I don't know, bare knuckle fighting championships would be cool. But, yeah, let's just dream a little bit. We'll awesome. See what happens, man.
So you and I were talking, Jason, about wanting to talk to Gabe, and Mr. Gabe is here. Gabe, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, man?
What's up, Gabe? How you doing, man?
Good. What's up? What do you want to talk about?
What's that? What do you want to talk about
exactly?
I think they're covering it, man.
Oh, okay. I'm running late. I'm sorry. I was at my grandparents for Father's Day. Just came in to the house. So I'm running late for the show, but I think we've got a few minutes left, so I figured I'd jump in here in the last bit.
Yeah, right on. Gabe, so happy Father's Day to you, Gabe. He's a father of beautiful kids and, you know, a beautiful wife. And, you know, congratulations, Gabe, and happy Father's Day.
Congratulations, Gabe.
So thank you. And actually, he was bringing up about Tough Five, and you know, Jason was supposed to be a competitor on it. So, you know, small world after all. And then we also talked about bare knuckle MMA. We talked about, you know, insurance for the fighters and what's important, especially after the career is over, and, you know, protecting the fighters and protecting investments. And we touched upon a lot of subjects, Gabe.
He was supposed to be on Tough Five.
Yeah,
Gabe, I saw you there, man. I actually made the show, and then they kicked me out of there because I, you know, told them that I was used to be on human growth hormone and testosterone when I broke my neck.
Huh? What do you mean? Who took your place? Because from my understanding, the cast was fairly set prior to us getting there. Were you actually in Vegas?
I saw you at medicals, man.
Really?
In Vegas, yeah.
I remember doing medicals.
Hey, Dave, I sent you that sheet with the names, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. You sent me the sheet. Let me pop it up really quick.
Good show, Gabe.
Yeah, let me.
Oh, that's weird. I remember everyone I did medicals with. I know. Let's see. Matt Wyman was definitely in the van with me. Who else was there with me?
I remember Wyman in the van.
I mean, it's possible, but man, I think I remember you being there.
That was a lot of years ago, bro.
Yeah, that's possible. That's possible. I don't remember like you being there, but that doesn't mean that you weren't.
I was there, you know. Brother.
Yeah.
I'll tell
you. Okay. And then you were supposed to be on the show, but then
I made the show, and then they said no lie on that application, man. So I didn't lie, and I told them about my HGH and testosterone. The athletic commission turned it down after I made the show.
Huh. So do you know who took your spot?
I don't.
Oh, okay. All
right. I don't. Yeah, you have that list, Dave, don't you?
Yeah, I'm going to read the list right now. It's actually
I have no list. I mean, Well, that was what, 07, 08? I don't remember anything.
2007.
Yeah, I remember I gave it to you at the medicals in Diaz. I remember thinking, what the fuck have I got myself into?
Dude,
even in medicals, people are like, you're fighting at 55? And I'm like, yeah, man, it was crazy.
Because you were a bantamweight for a while there, Jason, yeah. Correct?
Yes.
Wow. Whew. And that cast was murderous row. I mean, you had Gabe, you had Nate Diaz, you had Joe Lazon, you had Marlon Sims. Holy crap. And you had Corey Hill. Yeah, and Cole Miller, too. Jesus Christ.
It's probably a good idea they kicked me off of there.
I mean, that season was just fucking murderous row. I mean, and I hate reality TV to begin with. And Gabe and I have this conversation all the time, which I thought Tough was a complete bullshit concept. And any reality TV show that tries to add drama and Kim Kardashian type bullshit, you know, I just think it's absolutely absurd and it doesn't work. And it should have been a show about fighting.
Well,
and completely about fights, not about drama or anything.
But it does work. It does work. That's why they have 27 seasons of it. The reality of it is people want to watch entertaining shit. And like let's be honest, like most fighting stuff is pretty boring. You know what I mean? Really? Like the day-to-day grind. I mean, every once in a while you get a fight in the room or something like that. But for the most part, it's boring. You know what I mean? A fight camp is a boring time. You go in, you do the work, and then you go home and you eat and you take a nap. And, you know, I mean, there's some antics, but not nearly as much as, you know, you put 16 personalities in a room without the ability to be part of the outside world.
Gabe, you remember Jamie from Spike TV?
Of course, very well.
That was the girl that called me, and she said, it's the hardest part of my job, and that's when she told me the news.
Yeah, Jamie, I believe last I heard, Jamie was still part of the production.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember. I spoke to someone that was on the show, and my friend worked with her on Ink Master. She's on Ink Master now. That's right.
I see. Yeah, she was great, man. She tried everything, man. She tried to send them my prescription, the whole nine yards. She was great.
Jamie was an exceptional. I really liked her a lot.
Absolutely.
So, obviously we're running a little bit behind. We're, gonna wrap this up with Chris surprising. But one more question. Mike Tyson said, Ken Shamrock said he wants to fight Mike Tyson. Jason, if you were to fight, who would you, in bare knuckle? If you were to fight again in bare knuckle, who would you fight, Jason?
I don't know, man. I have no idea. Maybe, who is it? That Danny Bonaducci, maybe? He's my age, bro. He's boxes.
Gabe, would you fight a Danny Bonaducci by chance?
Who?
I don't know who that is. The name sounds
Danny Bonaducci.
Mildly familiar, isn't he, but I don't know who that is.
I tell you, I bet Gabe will fight Pete CM Punk.
You'll fight CM Punk.
Yeah. I mean, Brad Giordi's a nice guy, but I would fight him.
I know. He is.
I've heard from – I have a lot of mutual friends that know him. They say he's actually a really nice guy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, look, he had opportunity to fight in the UFC with zero MMA fights.
Great.
Because of his pro wrestling. And, I mean
– right. I was
rude. I don't know if it's something you want to do and you get an opportunity to do it because you're famous. I mean, I can't really fault the guy for it.
No kidding, man. I was rooting for him, man.
Yeah, look, I mean, why not make the shot? Like, you know, look, it's something I want to do. Might as well do it on the highest stage possible. I mean, you're only gonna do that if you have some level of notoriety.
Yeah, man. It was great.
Yeah.
Jason, this has been absolutely fun. You have so many things in the works with Bare Knuckle MMA and also with the documentary that's coming out, the movie. We're all going to be looking out for it and looking out for your new promotion that's happening in Florida for Bare Knuckle MMA. But any sponsors, any websites we can find you, Instagram, where can we locate you and keep following your career and all?
Man, honestly, bro, it isn't about me, bro. I just want to get the message out about Free Lee Murray. Go to his page, Free Lee Murray UFC. Press like and share, man. We got to get a message to the King of Morocco.
Awesome, man. Awesome. And, you know, Jason, it was a pleasure for you to come on, talk about your career, talk about, you know, MMA and bare knuckle. And I thank you so much for coming on, brother, and sharing the story. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, you guys. See, hey, Matt, see you. Hey, Gabe, I'll see you, man. All the best, bro.
Sorry I came in late, my man. I missed quite a bit, obviously. I got to find out what this free Lee Murray. I mean, I know who Lee Murray is, and I understand he's in jail, but I got to figure out what that is about.
Right on, man. It's about him being locked up for almost 15 years on a 10-year sentence, and then him not even getting a fair trial and not be – he's the only one that wasn't allowed to call witnesses. And so – you know, we're trying to get a message to the king to try, you know, for his release so he can be home with his family where he belongs.
Yeah, all right.
Awesome. So, Jason, thank you so much for coming on the show, brother.
All right, guys. And, hey, guys, thanks, man. All right, man. See ya. Thank you.
Have a good one. Gabe, happy Father's Day, sir. And
thank you.
Joe, and how was your Father's Day?
It was nice. I mean, it was laid back for the most part. I slept in till 9, which is pleasant. Spent time with my daughters and went over to my grandparents and, you know, my grandfather's in his late 80s. So spent some time with him. Came in a little late. I didn't realize that there was a movement to get Lee Murray out of prison. That story is amazing. And it reads like fiction, the whole Lee Murray robbery thing and everything that goes along with it is pretty amazing. I think they definitely should be a movie out of it. But I didn't realize that he was I didn't know he was still in prison, and two, I didn't hear anything about it except for the hat that Jason was wearing.
And he also, Lee Murray also infamously beat the shit out of Tito Ortiz in a street fight when Tito Ortiz ran his mouth. So that was something I always supported. And Matt Hughes famously talked about that in his book. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of Lee Murray, if you could say.
Anyway, I think he should be out for that reason alone. he should go to the King of Morocco. Should be like, yeah, he did steal some money, but he knocked out Tito. So, you know what?
I have my opinions about the trial, and I think that, you know, misconceptions with MMA fighters played a heavy factor. They're like, oh, it's an MMA fighter. Obviously, he fucking did this. So, obviously, I have my own opinions about it, and I think Lee Murray, you know, did not get a fair shake in court. And I was always a big fan from watching the UFC and walking out with the Hannibal Lecter mask. And, you know, I was always a fan of Lee Murray. And what, Gabe, I got to ask you, because I've always wondered this, in your professional opinion, and I heard about this on the underground forums probably around 2001, 2002. Did Lee Murray kick the shit out of Tito Ortiz?
Yes.
It happened.
I've heard it from at least two people that were there that actually saw it. Yeah, and I mean, he didn't kick the shit out of him. He dropped him with a punch, and then it was kind of broken up. But, I mean, it was one of those things that, like, once you get dropped by a punch, now, admittedly, like, you know, could Tito have gotten a single leg and pulled him down? Maybe, but you know, that big lunkhead, once it hit the concrete and what's in Tito's head, you know, I obviously, like, you know, it's a street confrontation, but like I from everyone I talked to, he got dropped by a one shot.
And that's so intriguing too, because Tito Ortiz denied that it ever happened, and then after he lost to Chuck Liddell, he said, yeah, there's this little middleweight running around, Lee Murray, and he's talking smack, so I want to beat the shit out. That doesn't sound like a guy that, you know, an ass whooping did not happen or a fight did not break out. So, you know, denied it and then called out Lee Murray. You know, it makes perfect sense. So, like,
yeah, no, and, I think in a fight, Tito unfortunately would have beat Lee Murray, because he would have just taken him down and kind of laid on top of him and you know, did what Tito kind of did at you know, when he was whatever his stupid nicknames are. Yeah, but I from all the people that I've talked to, including two that were there at the incident, Tito got his ass whooped.
On every show, you learn something new, and thanks to Mr. Gabe. So, Gabe, you know, I know you joined us late because obviously it takes a village, and we should have celebrated you today because raising two daughters, beautiful daughters, and two beautiful dogs, you know, it takes a village, and obviously you need a day to celebrate Mr. Gabe. So, Gabe, any words, any thoughts, anything that you want to share besides your beautiful gym, Kajula MMA and Fitness, located
in beautiful. No, I just, I, you know, it's, we've had a little hiatus and I wanted to make sure I came on for at least a minute. I missed a lot of Jason. I'm trying to think, I genuinely don't think that I saw Jason during the medicals. I mean, is it possible? Yeah. But I mean, he was a name that was recognizable. Like, I mean, cause Jason Reinhart, cause like, he was kind of known in like the forums and whatnot at that point. I would have known if I, but then again, who knows? It's still possible. I'm just thankful to get an opportunity to be on the show at least a little bit. So there we go.
I just want to hear your thoughts. Okay. Describe it in one word. Okay. Jake Paul versus Tyron Woodley. One word to describe that fight.
Did somebody fart? Cause if that's the case, that was mic drop. I thought I heard a fart and that's enough for making me into mic drop. I'll be honest with you. I don't care. I don't like, I hope that Tyron sleeps him. And I think that he has the skill set to do so, but I mean, I don't care. Hey, if we're talking about, shit fest, Anderson just, taxed up Chavez Jr. last night.
Yes, he did, baby.
Dude, I mean, the thing is, okay, now Chavez Jr. is just that. He's Jr. And he tries to live off of his dad's fame. And everyone I've talked to in the boxing world knows that he's not. But Anderson, this is, I think, what, second pro boxing match?
The last one he fought was 2005. Anderson Silva actually trained with the Cuba Olympic team too. He's a very good boxer.
I know I've told you, but Anderson and I are bad boys for life. So anything Anderson does, I support him 100%, and I'm very, very thankful that he walked away with that a win. But so yeah, we're gonna talk about like funky math matches. This, at least that one, like Anderson was one of the greatest of all time, and Cesar Chavez Jr.'s dad was one of the greatest of all time. But you know, he's kind of lived off of his dad's laurel, so at least it was a legitimate match in the respect that both of them were pros. You know, Jake and Logan Paul, if they disappeared tomorrow, I wouldn't care one way or the other.
Yeah, big shout out to Anderson Silva. And again, I'm a fanboy for, you know, Anderson Silva as well. And Gabe trained with Anderson Silva. And, you know, I marked out when they read that split decision and it was red for Anderson Silva. Well, well deserved. In only his second boxing bout, he beats a former world champion. I mean, that was huge. That was awesome.
Well, but I mean, like Cesar Chavez Jr., I mean, again, like Cesar Chavez is one of the greatest of all time. But like Cesar Chavez Jr., as far as name recognition, I mean, just being born with that name is enough to, you know, like to have recognition. I mean, again, he was a former world champion. Now, admittedly, in the boxing world, he is known as his father's not nearly as physically gifted son. But regardless, he's still, you know.
There has to be some sort of boxing genetics passed down.
Yes and no, but the thing is, you know what is not passed on? Work ethic.
Right.
And when you're born into royalty, how much work are you really going to do? Mm. You know what I mean? Like, I guarantee you Cesar Chavez worked like nobody's business because he had to, because whatever his father's name was, what was his father's name? Do you remember his father?
Fuck, I doesn't ring a bell, but there's Gabe.
Yeah. That was my point. That was my point. So he had to work his butt off to be who he was. If you're born into it, like, but then again, like, it could also be like you would expect him because of the name he. Well, that's the other side. If you're going to become a pro in the same thing that your dad did, you better recognize and come with everything you've got. But you know, fighting is a singular sport, and you're not just because you train with someone doesn't mean you're going to be as great as them. Just because you're born with the same genetics that you're going to have the same skill set as, you know, your father. So
this show is brought to you by Kajija MMA. If you want to train with the best and train with former four-time world champion Gabe Rudiger, go to Kajija MMA. And if you want to hear Gabe bursting my bubble about everything, every single show. Because I was so hyped to the tits when Anderson Silva beat a former world champion. I'm going to let that, of course, Gabe.
No. Don't, please. Okay, you're misinterpreting what I'm saying. Like, I think it's just me and maybe the way I comes off. But, dude, it's Anderson's second pro boxing match.
Right.
And regardless of what I've said about Junior, he is still a legitimate pro boxer, unlike – the Paul brothers. So beating him means far more than say he beats some YouTube star that, you know, that, well, like, where was Jake Paul calling out Anderson? Where was that fight?
Yeah. No, he didn't. He actually invited Anderson Silva to fight Roy Jones Jr. on the undercard of Jake Paul versus Tyron Woodley, which is fucking insane. I wouldn't speak when spoken to when you talk to fucking Anderson Spider Silva. I mean, Jake Paul, you're not even in his league. And for, like, his tweet, he's so far removed from reality and his head is so far up his ass. Like, inviting Anderson Silva, one of the greatest of all time, to fight on your undercard.
And Roy Jones.
YouTuber. Get the fuck out of here.
And Roy Jones. I mean, like, look. Like, Roy Jones is my top, one of my top three favorite boxers of all time. Just pure boxing. And Anderson is one of my top three. I'm one of the top three greatest MMA fighters, and you can argue that all you want. You gonna fart again?
No, I was saying I think he's the best.
Like, everyone can argue, like, but my personal feeling, Anderson is the greatest because of how he made it. He made it look like a video game,
right?
Like, yeah. In his prime, the way he just played with people, we have yet to see that. Like just. I'll never forget when he was fighting Stephen Bonner, and Stephen Bonner takes him to the cage, and Anderson breaks out. He goes, "Oh no!" He's like, "Come on, come back here." He goes back to the cage, like, "Here you go, get the position you want to get. Are you ready? Okay, good." Like, dude, that is such a different level of perfection in your fight skill.
And how great he became, you know, he went from being shoot a box. And being in Vanderlei Silva's shadow when Vanderlei Silva was the marquee guy in Pride, and he lost to Anderson Silva lost to Daijiro Takase, who's a Japanese pro wrestler, by triangle choke. To go from that
side control,
wait,
from
what?
Side control from the side, like, dude, it was a side control triangle. It was slick. It was super slick. But yeah, to get caught with that, ridiculous.
Right, and then you know, Anderson Silva was losing in Pride. And then he gets hooked up with Muay Thai Dream Team and then, you know, pretty much starts his own band. And, you know, he gets the attention he deserves in the gym. And he became one of the greatest of all time. He went from that to the greatest. You know, that you can't write a better story. I mean, that it's mind-blowing. His entire career is fucking mind-blowing to me.
Definitely undercard ability.
Crazy, man. Crazy. It's unbelievable. So any final words, Mr. Gabe?
Well, first and foremost, happy Father's Day to all the fathers that are putting it down, being there for their children. We need more strong males that are out there for their kids, strong females as well. We just need strong parents in general. I am thankful to know as many as I do. I'm really, really grateful to, on a day like this, as a father myself, to have so many that I can then look at as exceptional leaders and exceptional parents that are making the best for their kids. So for everyone that is watching the Fight Mixer, that's a father, I salute you. I mean, obviously the mothers as well, they get their day. And I mothers obviously deserve maybe 2 days. I think we should get 2 days.
I'll give them 2 days.
I would give. There should be two Mother's Days. So there should be like a. But today is for fathers, and I'm thankful to be one and to know as many as I do, including Matt. And I mean, David is a great cat dad. Let's be honest. David is a great cat dad. I mean,
surrounded by great fathers with Mr. Gabe and Matt, producer. Any final words, sir?
No, not really. Look forward to some big things happening, I guess.
Yep, big things are in the works. Absolutely. Indeed. So Happy Father's Day, Mr. Gabe. Happy Father's Day to Matt. Happy Father's Day to everybody, all the fathers who are here, and even my dad who's not with us anymore. Happy Father's Day to everybody. And we'll see you next week for the Fight Mixer from Mr. Gabe, Matt, and myself. Signing off. Peace.
Perfect.